Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on yet another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have a very interesting show for you today. We've brought together a great group of guests. We're going to learn some, we're going to teach some. But before we do that, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that is to go ahead and share this show. I know there's some neighbor, some friend, some roommate, maybe your grandmother, who I don't know who it is, the cousin, Aunt Sue, but somebody needs to hear this message today. And they need to learn about how our entrepreneurs, our authors are being successful, and we want to share it. So while you're sharing the show, I'll go ahead and introduce our first guest. Now, her story was very interesting. I love when people are doing whatever they can to help the world. Her organization, Draw Change, is a nonprofit organization founded in 2009, which has a focus on empowering youth, especially homeless youth, through the arts. Miss Jeannie Lobato. Good morning, Jeannie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing today?
I am excited, and I especially love to see backgrounds and when people have backgrounds that represent their company, their organization. You know, I have my little background because I'm like, let's talk. But what do you have in your background?
Yeah, so this is homeless children's artwork. Most of it's homeless children. Our focus in the United States is homelessness. And then outside of the United States, it's severely impoverished children. But this is artwork that was made within our programs. And all the artwork is like you see, like rainbows and happiness and happy colors, because all the artwork that we do with them is simply a means to help them express whatever trauma they're going through in their lives. Right now, the state of the world, just giving them an outlet to express themselves and using art therapy principles to help them relax and breathe and forget about where they're going to be sleeping maybe that evening or something like that.
That is so beautiful. Why are you so passionate personally about this cause?
For me, it was a personal relationship with the arts. I was always, my parents always exposed or did not shy away. And I used the arts as a child and then adolescent to help me navigate, at the time, crazy things that were going on in my childhood. I grew up in the inner city of Jersey City. Saw a lot of things that I shouldn't have seen at that age, and drugs and alcohol and violence. And I always resorted to the arts to help me even like process what was going on and make sense of it. So I just really wanted to grant that opportunity to children around the world that would are facing either those that are either in those types of environments or facing any kind of adversity.
Nonprofits especially are those industries where, you know, sometimes you have those hard days, those long days where you feel like there's never enough hours in the day, not enough that you can do, you know, for every child that you help, there's five more who want your assistance and they want you to help them. Can you tell us about a moment where you like maybe you had it with a child or a painting where you said, you know what, this moment makes it all worth it?
So many. I would say we are, and you know, this is before COVID, but we are very, we don't use physical touch because a lot of the children that we work with, like I mentioned, the United States have experienced a lot of trauma, sexual trauma, things like that. So we don't, and then every once in a while, a child will give us a hug at the end and say, thank you. They're like, simply thank you so much for coming. And to hear a 7-year-old say, thank you so much for, you know, and what they know is that we came for an hour into this place where they're staying, which is a homeless shelter, and we created artwork with them. And to hear a child say something like that is huge. I also had a teenager, maybe like 16. So now on the opposite spectrum, like fully aware, fully understanding of what's going on. And he always had, you know, he's a teen. He was always too cool for school and kind of just going with the flow, kind of like not really wanting to associate with any of the volunteers or any of the other children in the room. And then he got a home with, it was a single child and I think he was with his grandma. And he was telling us that he was going to be leaving the following week. And, you know, it's for us, it's always bittersweet because, you know, we're going to miss him. And then at the same time, homelessness is a cycle. So we often wind up seeing the same children at different homeless shelters around the city. But he's like, I got a secret to tell you. And he couldn't voice it. And I still have the little sheet of paper. And I was like, well, if you can't say it, why don't you write it to me? And he wrote down a little sheet of paper and then he gave it to me at the very end of the session. He's like, draw change, changed my life. Thank you. Oh, and that was extremely touching because from a 16-year-old, again, like he gets it. That really did mean a lot to him. But I have countless stories like that.
That is so beautiful. I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest, usually what happens is I have guests who give me too much information. Their bios are long. They have 30 degrees, have written 15 books, and tell me everything since the third grade. Our next guest put in his bio, his only claim to fame is not being dead. I was like, I gotta meet this guy. I gotta meet him. Let's introduce Mr. Wayne McFarland. Good morning, Wayne. How are you?
Sharifa, I'm great. Delighted to be here. Thank you.
How was that introduction?
So, I have are you kidding me? If I wasn't happily married, my wife would kill me. I'd probably propose at this very moment. It was wonderful. Thank you. Now, I do have a goal this morning. My goal is to hear more about Rory's book. Mm-hmm. And maybe he can talk me into a different savings plan than what I call my jar plan, which is keeping money in a jar under the mattress. I suspect that's not the best approach. So I'm anxious to hear about Rory's book. There's a plug for you.
We didn't need to plug Rory. We'll get to Rory. Rory's wonderful. Okay, I'm plugging you right now. Let's talk about all your stories, Wayne, where you almost died.
Well, I wrote the book, Tales from the Day. There comes a shameless plug on my part. When we sold a business, my wife and I owned a software business, and I've always loved to read, so I was reading memoirs and biographies, and Sharifa, I gotta tell you, most memoirs really suck. I mean, they're really bad, you know? And usually it's the memoir is someone starting out with something like, I looked to the mountains and I set my jaw and I said, there lies my future. It doesn't work like that. I mean, Sharifa, I know you've been involved with a lot of stuff and ran for office and whatever. And I suspect if somebody pulled up to the curb and asked you years ago, what you'd be doing in 2020, you wouldn't have said this.
Definitely not.
I read all this stuff. Yeah. And I read all these memoirs and I thought, you know, life doesn't happen like that. Life generally happens in strange and weird kind of chapters, like losing 10 grand at the Hollywood sign or going shark fishing in our underwear. And so I wrote up all this weirdness and, at 27 chapters, trying to make each chapter a complete story in itself. And when I took it to a publisher, the immediate reaction was, no, you can't do this. A memoir has to have a narrative arc. It has to start with you getting cancer or something, and then all your travails and conquering it, and then a happy resolution at the end. And I said, but it doesn't usually work like that. So I did get a publisher who was crazy enough to go along with me. And as it turns out, our timing was good because we live in a 150 character world now, a Twitter world. So it went out there and the reviews were kind and we did pretty well. But I think a lot of it is, most of the stuff I'm told is humorous. And Sharifa, I got to tell you, I have a core belief that people would rather laugh than cry.
I believe that as well.
Not all the stories are.
No, I believe that as well.
So let me ask. All the stories are. Yep. Go ahead.
I think we have a delay here, Wayne. Do you have any interest in Vegas stories?
Vegas? Yeah, I have a lot, as in Las Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah, I have one in my book called The Day We Pitched the Loan Shark.
Ooh, I like hearing about loan sharks, Wayne.
Well, that was a day we made a presentation to, back when Vegas was mostly run by the mob, made a presentation to the biggest, baddest loan shark in town to get a contract, advertising contract out of them. So it was a very weird experience. So that's one of the stories in my book. So to answer your question, yeah, I have an interest in Vegas. It's seen it transform itself from really being mostly mob run to now it's squeaky clean with MGM and Coca-Cola and a lot of big corporations owning the place.
I just wanted to hear that story because you were totally here the last time and I was trying to figure out how to find that loan shark because I need to make some improvements for Ash Sharifa. But since you want me to talk to Rory about how I'm going to get the money, I'm going to come back to you. So
yes.
I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. He is the founder of Aqua Financial. He's an expert in financial literacy. He works in entertainment and investment. He's a high performance life coach, and he's also an author, Mr. Rory Douglas. Good morning, Rory. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thanks for having me this morning. I'm excited.
I have a question to ask.
Go right ahead.
Okay, but I think it's one of those questions. You know how when people be like, okay, if I tell you, I got to kill you? But I'm going to ask it anyway. Like, are you like the third member of the Men in Black, but nobody knows?
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
I just was wondering. I was just wondering. Okay, I'm sorry. Then who are you and what do you do, Rory?
Well, I'm Rory Douglas, and I'm a financial educator, and I have a passion to help people pursue their purpose in the areas of finance.
Where'd that come from?
Well, it came because of when I was a child in school, I was most likely not to succeed because I got kicked out of every elementary school and every junior high school because I suffered with a disability that was called dyslexia. I read things backwards. Mm-hmm. And later on in my early childhood, one day I was driving down the road with my mom and my mom told me, read those instructions. And she insists that I read those instructions because we were in a hurry. And I tried to read them, I was reading them backwards. Mm-hmm. So my mom realized that there was a problem at that particular point. The counselors and the teacher said, this guy is so gifted, he's smart, his memory is impeccable, but why is he disrupting the class? But I would disrupt the class, avoiding my disability. So therefore, when it's time for open book or test, I would create some commotion to get thrown out of the class. And that really hurt me actually because I was very much engaged, but I couldn't perform on that level. So I always tell people, you can have a disability, but you don't have to be disabled. So I use vulnerability as my superpower. So I always let people know who I am and where I get my passion from. But once I did get some counseling for that particular disability I had, I went back to school and I got straight A's and I accomplished a lot. So I would just basically say that my passion is in the areas of finance because I've been an entrepreneur since a kid, starting a lemonade stand. And I've always been that person to pretty much sell candy and at school and just generate finance. And for me, finance is so simple and easy that it became not only my passion, it's pretty much like my ministry. So I want to make sure that I get the message of financial literacy out to everyone because we're dealing at a time like never before where the average American is 1 to 2 paychecks away from being homeless and 1 out of 3 Americans in debt. And the average American family cannot even handle a $400 emergency and one of the richest countries in the world. And why is that? We don't have a money problem. We have a literacy problem and it's not being taught in our schools. And it's not being taught in our colleges and university. It's a lot of things that people need to know. So my new book is called Cracking the Rich Code. And I'm showing people how to have money for a lifetime and not a lunchtime, and understand the importance of financial literacy.
That's amazing. I like that. I didn't get my book in the mail though. I didn't see it. I didn't study
it. You got it.
I didn't see it. The mail is slow. I think it's because of the ballots. You know, that whole, like, it used to take 3 days for the mail. Now it take 30 because of the election that's coming up. I think that's very interesting. I also believe, in addition to the literacy problem, that it's the problem of distribution, that wealth is not equally distributed in America, but it's also available. People need the information, like you said, the literacy to go out and figure out, okay, how do I get access to it? That's part of the education.
I agree totally. But I will say this to you that, you know, I'll give you an example. California is pretty much rated last in financial literacy. Mm-hmm. And we basically are conditioned basically to have a lack of financial literacy because it's not really taught. You know, we're taught, you know, algebra and things of that sort, but no one is really, really taught how to balance a checkbook, understand how money works. So there's a lot of things that young kids need to know, like compounding interest, rule of 72. So there's a lot of mathematical formulas that everyone needs to know that can actually catapult them to the top in terms of finance, but it's not really being taught. So that's why I go around America and Canada and give financial literacy seminars, and people are empowered. And especially, I have a passion to get to young people. Right before the pandemic, I left a school that was called El Camino High here in Calabasas and talked to the young people about financial literacy, and you should see their eyes. They transform because some things that they thought was not reachable becomes reachable. So I always tell people, your dreams are not a figment of your imagination, just showing you glimpses of your future. So we have to teach kids about finance before we teach them how to use video games and teach them how to do other things that they would normally do on a consistent basis. And as you said, you know, in America, the wealth gap is so wide. You got 5% controlling the 95%. And it's just like, it's a different language because doctors have language, lawyers have language. And in finance, there's a language also too. That's the reason why the book Cracking the Rich Code is so important, because we're giving financial simple tips to help people empower themselves in terms of finance.
I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest momentarily, but I had another question. I'm kind of curious and interested when you say how California rates in this rating system. I would want to know, like, according to who on your rating system, because most millionaires are made, most first time millionaires are made through, bless you, Wayne, through entertainment or athletics. And so with California having Hollywood right here, you have a lot of millionaires in California. So I'm just kind of curious when you say the rating system in California as far as
financial system.
Okay, that made it clear. That answered that question. I'm going to come back to you, Rory. I want to go back over and introduce our next guest. She is the author of A Discerning Eye. She's going to go ahead and join this conversation, Ms. Carol Orange. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much, Sharifa, for having me on your podcast. Webinar. Excuse me.
Nobody knows what to call it. I just made it up. It's a video cast, live talk show. I just said it's a talk show because we talk on the show, but you can call it whatever you like.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. So you are an author. When did you become an author, Carol?
This is my debut novel, and it's about my fifth career. Mm-hmm. Although I've always been involved with books, I've always had my head in a book. And I've also always been passionate about art. So I love what Jeannie is doing. I think what Jeannie is doing is really inspiring.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Yes. So Carol, you said this was your fifth career. You're lucky, because I think at 44, I think I'm on my 40th career at this point. I think I just changed careers yesterday. But what made you decide to go from your fourth career to your fifth career?
Oh, well, I've always wanted, well, I've always been writing. I've had a couple of short stories published, but this particular story about the robbery at the Gardner Museum in Boston, where I used to live, really, really grabbed me and has been, you know, in my head for quite some time. I mean, I just couldn't get over, here's this incredibly beautiful museum. It's a Venetian palace inside, and it has some of the most fabulous paintings in the world, so that people can come and find solitude and peace and all kinds of beautiful feelings inside this gorgeous space. And the fact that someone robbed this museum and stole 13 paintings just set me off. It's like the greed of whoever did that was astronomical. I mean, they took, you know, a Vermeer that there are only 36 Vermeers in the world, and they took this Vermeer painting that is so magnificent and so moving, and they deprived the public of this art. So it had me so angry, so upset. So this story has been revolving around in my head, and I, you know, invented, because it's a novel, I invented a group of characters, and one of them is named Portia Malatesta, and she's an art dealer, and she analyzes the paintings that were stolen, and she finds a common theme, which is the tension between dark and light. And I think that's what we all have to deal with in our lives, the tension between dark and light. And her theory was that the thief was also very concerned with this. And that's why he, and I believe it was a he, stole, or he arranged to have these paintings stolen, because he didn't do it himself. He hired some mafioso types to go into the Gardner and steal these paintings. And they still haven't been found, although my hope is that they will be found at some point. I mean, it's been 30 years, and my hope is that someone's gonna find them in a house somewhere.
You know, one of the things I find very interesting about you, Carol, is that when you were sharing this, you kept looking off and you look back, but when you looked off, I could tell you were reliving it. You were seeing it, like you were really seeing it in your mind's eye. And it was like a beautiful thing to watch.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sharifa. Thank you, thank you.
But would you say that's correct? Like, is this
absolutely correct. I mean, I'm passionate about this. You know, I think art should be shared. I think art is such an incredible way of, you know, people expressing themselves, and moving art, emotional art, should be shared with other people. It should not be hanging in someone's home where no one else can see it.
Mm-hmm. Jeannie, what are your thoughts on what Carol had to say?
I have so many. First of all, Carol, I can't wait to read your book.
Thank you.
And one of our, I have a lot to say, but one of our like culmination of our programs, like the program that puts like a little bow on all of our programs, is art shows, that we have children's art shows, and we ask them to dress up and as much dress up as they can. And they go to a gallery and they see their artwork on a wall, and it's just like what you were seeing in Carol's eyes magnified, because now these are the little artists and they see their artwork framed, and they see people there also dressed up going to see just to see their artwork, and oftentimes we sell their artwork, and then they can, you know, that money goes directly back to them, teaching them the financial literacy that Rory was talking about. And it's like a just a full circle. And like I, you know, I use the analogy of rap and everything we do with the bow, because you know, we're using art just to empower them to let them know, to sort of equalize that playing field that we also already talked about a little bit. And then in the finale, we let them see their artwork on a wall, and people are generally interested in coming to see, you know, just these little children's artwork, but there's definite beauty and kind of also what Rory was talking about. Anyone can achieve any greatness. It's just being given that little spark of hope that you can do this. It might seem insurmountable. It might seem like you can never get to the Boston Museum, but that's not true. You can, and we're all capable of it. And yeah, I can go on forever.
It's okay. I'm good at what I do. At around a couple minutes, I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
I have a question for you, Carol. Viviana Puello, who is the editor and founder of Art Tour International Magazine, said she absolutely agrees with what you had to say about your book. She said she loves your novel. She would love to read it. Where is it available?
Oh, it's available everywhere books are sold. Bookshop, I like to send people to bookshop.org. because some of their profits, and this is taking Rory's financial literacy into account, some of the profits of bookshop.org go to independent bookstores. And I like to support independent bookstores. And also you can call your local bookstore and they'll order it for you. I mean, it's available everywhere else, but I'm really thinking about how about just what Rory was saying, which I totally support. I think it's marvelous that he's teaching financial literacy, because it needs to be taught in the schools. And so I'm promoting bookshop.org as a way to get my book. Thank you.
I have to apologize, Swain. I didn't catch the name of your book.
It's called A Discerning Eye. And I came up with that title because the person who, the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, Isabella, you know, just had an incredible eye for art. She was taught by some of the experts at Harvard, but she had her own ideas as well. She was one hell of a strong woman. So that's what it's called.
I read is that oftentimes paintings are stolen. They can't resell them because they're so famous, but a lot of times I read they're stolen so someone can just put them in their house and look at them.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I agree with what Carol was saying. There's just the amount of greed that it takes to do something like that.
You can't resell the paintings. They're too famous, you know, so.
Yeah, and then you just look at it every day and you are reminded, well, maybe not, maybe they're not, but you're reminded of that doesn't belong to me. That's someone else's wealth. It's the community's wealth. It's just,
yes, absolutely. So Amy Hughes says, I love Carol and Jeannie's energy. She said, dyslexia is no joke. Good for you for persevering, Rory. So we're just getting some comments, just reading those to everyone. Great show. So Wayne, let me throw you a comment then. I love your energy. Tell us about your experience with the Hollywood sign.
Well, this falls under the heading of, again, it's the reason I'm going to buy Rory's book, but it falls under the heading of sometimes the things happen totally out of your control. And it seems like the worst disaster you've ever been involved with turns out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to you.
Absolutely.
How it all came about is I was in California. I'd run away to the circus. So we were in California and how broke were we? We were so broke. I mean, we were on the edge of living your car broke. I mean, broke. And we were doing corporate commercials, basically, pitching, you know, roofing materials and whatever. And we do it with a soundtrack and some visuals, you know, slides and stuff. And one day when lasers first came out, we used a laser in a presentation. I think it was for swimwear. And so the next day in my little cramped office, I get a call. And this guy says, are you the one with the laser? Well, I didn't have a laser. We borrowed the laser. But I said, yeah, sure, that's me. And the person said, listen, we have the contract to provide searchlights for the unveiling of the new Hollywood sign. And we were thinking, what better thing could we do than to add lasers? And I said, brilliant, brilliant idea. So they hired us to put lasers on the Hollywood sign and shoot them around as the television cameras whirled. It was a live TV show, Sharifa.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, to a third of the nation. So I had visions of a chair with my name on it, you know, a megaphone, food trucks, overhead mics. I mean, this was it, right? Mm-hmm. So I had just, Gloria and I, my wife, hadn't been married too long. So off we go to the Hollywood sign. And I borrowed a couple of lasers, but there's no water, there's no power. So based on my contract to do this work with CBS, I got a power truck and a water truck on credit. Mm-hmm. So the night of the show comes, and there was a live production featuring a wonderful entertainer. Her name was Lola Falana. Poor lady got MS, so she's not around much anymore. But I didn't know her personally, but this was a lady who not only was brilliant, but she had her own song. What Lola wants, Lola gets. I've always wanted my own song. And also, she won part of the Mets team in a baccarat game, which she later sold for $14 million. How could you not love a lady like this? I mean, you know.
I want to be that way.
No kidding. Me too. I had her picture on my wall, you know. It was great. And so anyway, she finishes up. And Sharif, as you know, it doesn't snow in Southern California. Mm-hmm. It's sleet either, but it snowed that night.
And oh, wow.
On top of the mountain, yeah. And lasers do not like cold or hot. They have a tube in them that if they get too cold or too hot, it blows up. And each tube is $5,000.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I had two lasers up there. So the PD, the production guy says, okay, you're hot, go. So we turned on the first laser and it blew up immediately. Uh-huh. So my wife and I were stumbling around holding umbrellas over the second one, turned it on and it blew up right away. So we're sitting up by the Hollywood sign, and I turned to my new wife and I said, well, we just tanked in front of 15 million people, you know, but the good news is at least tomorrow we get paid. So the next day comes and I call the company because I wanted to go get a check because now people were calling me looking for their money. Mm-hmm. And the phone rang and a guy picks us up and I told him I wanted to come down and get a check. And he started to laugh and he said, well, good luck with that. They just declared bankruptcy.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the day after the show, they tubed their company, right? So I'm sitting at my desk and Sharif, I don't know if I was weeping, but probably. And my whole life going before my eyes. And Gloria, my wife, came in and joggled my elbow. She said, you have got to see this. And she was holding a copy of the LA Times. And there was a huge review in there of the show, and they were raving about us. They were shrieking away about how the lasers split the night sky, blah, blah. Well, what happened was that as soon as it started to sleet and snow, the reporters all went in the trailer where there was free booze, and they all got drunk. So looking out the window, they thought the searchlights from our bankrupt employer were lasers. So they took a picture and we got a terrific review. I got tons of work out of it. It was the best review I ever got.
That is beautiful. I love that. I love stories where things just work out. They just somehow miraculously work out in the end. But one of my mom's favorite expressions is she's always just like, pray for miracles, but tie your camel. Rory, how can people help tie their camels so that if anything goes wrong, they have some kind of safety net?
That's a great question. But I want to start off by saying this. I think that this is a phenomenal conversation. And one thing you can say about this conversation that we're having this morning it's like everyone's found their passion. So they're living their purpose. And I think that when we get together and we find our passion, everyone is pretty much on the same page. The way people can do that, once again, you have to find your passion, whatever you're good at in life, and it'll be your purpose. But I think most people, they spend so much time investing in other areas. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, your greatest asset is your mindset. Mm-hmm. That's your greatest asset, your mindset.
Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
That's what we do here at the Roundtable Talk Show. We just cut people off when we're ready to talk.
I was gonna agree with you that I agree with you that it's their mindset, and poverty, never mind the poverty cycle, kind of stifles that mindset. And it's I love with what we're all doing, which just igniting that little spark, which has been dormant just because, you know, of natural circumstances in life, like they're impoverished for whatever reason, or I agree
with that. But I also feel, and I've been told, that more millionaires are made during a recession than any other time. When there is economic upheaval, that's when people have been forced to be creative. Even just being authors during a global pandemic, they saw about an 800% increase in new authors, because all of a sudden people have the time and energy to say, you know what do I want to do now? You know what? Maybe it's a great time for me to write my new book or that next best-selling novel. But when people are in good times and they have plenty, they're not creative. I think Tupac said it best, mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. It's having to come up with something and to create something that, to me, creates the miracle. I can quote Tupac. Don't laugh at me, Wayne. I see you.
No, I think it's great. Are you kidding me? And you were talking about what your mom used to tell you. Mm-hmm. My mom used to tell me, I brought you into life and I can take you out.
That's because you was being bad, Wayne. You was talking back. I know where that came from.
That's right.
But I would like to share something. I think for those listeners and those who are looking, especially like right now during this pandemic, you know, you have to really say to yourself, you know, things are not happening to you, they're happening for you. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we got to really encourage ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why more millionaires are being made right now, because, you know, tough times don't last, but tough people do. So that's what it's all about.
Yes, yes. What are some of the things that you do, Rory, in order to help you stay around or to stay tough during these difficult times?
Everything is habit. You know, I think that winning and losing is all about your habits. Mm-hmm. So what I normally do is I make sure that I'm following good habits, which means discipline and being consistent, because I believe consistency is the key to success, which means you don't have to be that good at something, but if you continue to work at it, you get better, not bitter. And most people, they misunderstand the word confidence. Confidence is not going to just happen tomorrow when you wake up. I'm sure you guys would agree with that. It took some time for Jenny to start her business. It took some time for Wayne to do what he did and with the experiences. But the bottom line is that confidence comes by doing the same thing over and over again. So you got to continue to just chip at it. And just like a masterpiece, an artist with a chisel, you're building your masterpiece. It takes time, but it's well worth it.
Yes, you're building your masterpiece, Carol. This is your fifth career, but it's well worth it.
Very much so. Very much so. Yes, I agree with what Rory says about discipline and building your craft. I would say that it took me about 20 years of writing to build my craft. I mean, it's not for people. I mean, you have to be passionate about it to want to hang in there that long and learn from your mistakes. And I totally agree. And
what were some of
I'm sorry. By the way, Rory, my daughter has dyslexia. And I told her we were lucky because she was diagnosed in third grade.
Yeah.
And I told her at the time that some of the most brilliant people in the world, including Winston Churchill, had dyslexia, and that it's to overcome it the way you did and the way she did, it shows how really, really smart you have to be, Rory. To,
wow, to you got my heart melting. I'm telling you. She is so good. She is. I'm going to buy five of your books.
Ooh, five orders. You just got five orders in your book, Carol. I want to go back to something you said, though, Carol. You said over 20 years, you learned a lot of, you made some mistakes. For people who are watching the show, just tuning in, and maybe they want to start on their first book, what are some of the mistakes that they can avoid?
Oh, I think you have to make mistakes. I think you learn from failure. I think that's one of the things that actually Silicon Valley knows very well. I think the best advice to writers is to leave your editor at home, to just write and not worry about, is this good? Is this not good? Just write and, you know, just open up your heart and write, and then go back and look at it much later, show it to other people that you respect, and listen to their feedback. And I was in lots of workshops. You have to make mistakes in order to learn.
Yes, absolutely.
Can I interject? I want to say something that's real important for people. I would say this here, when you're writing a book, one thing is key. Most people make this mistake. They write the book and then they try to promote the cover. So I recommend you come out with the cover first. That's gonna help you to write the book, because a lot of us procrastinate. We're writing the book. When is it coming? It's never coming. It's like a baby that never comes. The woman says she's pregnant, the baby never comes. But the bottom line is you have to put the cover out first, and you market that cover for that duration, that time that you complete the book, and then you'll kill two birds with one stone. You're doing your marketing ahead of time, your book comes out, and then everything runs smooth. But I made a mistake by basically writing books, but not putting the cover out. And I don't know if you guys ever heard of a person by the name of Wayne Dyer.
Yes.
Wayne Dyer basically told me that. He passed a few years ago, but he told me that. And I'm telling you, put the cover out first, and promote the cover, and then write the book. And then last but least, there's never any losses. There's only lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like that.
Sharif, if you don't mind, to interject something about book marketing, keying off of what Rory said, is that my background before I wrote my first book was marketing, corporate marketing. And one thing that astonishes me and can make a huge difference, and Rory, I'd be interested in your take on this, is that when a cover is created, what I recommend very strongly to people is get some reviews of your work and put them on the cover. Because you got to think, when you go into a bookstore, Carol or myself or Rory, and there's a book laying there, or books, hundreds of them, what's the first thing you look for? I know what I look for is I look for reviews on the cover. This is the greatest thing since sliced bread or whatever. But without that, my first reaction, I don't know about you guys, my first reaction is, this book can't be too good. Nobody's reviewed it. There's no positive reviews. So the first book I put out there, I had a couple reviews on the front cover and four excerpts on the back. That can be a bunch of work, but on the other hand, it can make the difference in getting your book moving. So I was at a seminar the other day, and I swear, if the audience had Rotten Tomatoes, they would have been throwing them at me. So the reason was, they said, okay, what are the three things you'd recommend to promote a book? And I said, well, first of all, you got to write something that people want to read. Either like Rory, you got a topic that people need to know about, or Carol, you've got a novel that'll grip people. And if you write something like a memoir about how you used to be able to put roller skates on your shoes, No one cares. They don't care. They might care about pitching a loan shark, but they're not going to care about that. The second thing I recommend to people is you have to find Sharifa and people
that's
like
right.
Sharifa.
That's to, right.
To get on shows and let people get to know you a little bit. And the third thing I always recommend is get a really good editor. I'd be interested in your reaction to that, Carol, but, and I don't mean an editor that has an axe to grind. They want to sell you marketing things or whatever. What I mean, an editor where that's where they do and they've got chops. Good editor can make the difference. The last thing, in addition to finding Sharifa, which maybe that'll be the title of my next book.
That's the title of my next book. I'm coming out. I'm going to take Rory's advice. My next book, and I'm telling the audience right now, is coming out on the 31st of March, 2021. And it is
yes.
titled Finding Sharifa.
There you go.
Have you guys ever seen a movie come out before the trailer?
No, of course not.
And Wayne, I'm telling you something. Wayne, this guy is a genius. I'm telling you, this guy, he's slipping a lot of things in there, and I'm learning. He's the old chip off the block, but I'm a new chip on the block. But the bottom line is this. When Wayne talked about putting reviews on your book cover, I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. See, even in business, I'll tell you in business, let's say if you want to rent a space out for your business and it's 10,000 square feet, they're going to charge you by the feet. So when you have a platform, you got to use that. You got to maximize that. You got to put everything there that's going to draw it in.
Yeah. But
most people don't do that.
No.
And so what Wayne just put out there, I'm telling you, people will pay for that information.
And yeah, that's why people tune into the show, the Roundtable Talk Show. We provide them information, nuggets, jewels, and what I like to call gold on this show. Jeannie, you were going to say something? No.
Yes, I was. I was gonna go back to Rory was talking about. He was talking about something, but what I wanted to say to that, whatever that was to just start. I think something a lot of entrepreneurs, they wait to have everything perfect, and then they just never start because then it's extremely overwhelming. And then back to Wayne's story about the Hollywood sign. He felt like this was an amazing opportunity. He had no idea where he was going to get the lasers, but he went ahead and did it anyway. He started, and now look at everything that came out of it.
Yes. Yeah. It was interesting. One of the things that we started with, I have a question for you, but I want to read two comments real quick. Joe Camargo Jr., I'm horrible with names, so Joe, forgive me for messing it up, but he said, when we were talking earlier about mistakes, he said, well said, mistakes are often the best teachers. And then Amy says, great show as always, love the nuggets and happy to have found Sharifa. Amy is the first person about to order my new book, Found Sharifa. I already got one order. And if you are tuning into this show, pre-order your book right now at AskSharifa.com, Found Sharifa. I love it. Jeannie, one of the questions that I want to ask, Carol was talking about the process of writing and getting it out and not necessarily have to be perfect. Wayne and Rory were talking about editing. But I know with art, it's the same way. Because I tell people in all my gifts, and I tell y'all the good Lord loves me because I have a lot of gifts, but I cannot draw a stick figure. Like, I'm serious. Like, I'm not that creative type. I'm more of an organizational type because in my head, if this art doesn't look right, I'm gonna be mad. So you have to work with the kids as well on their confidence to be able to just allow the art to come. Would you agree?
Yes, and that's a big part of our programming actually, because exactly not everyone sees art as a therapeutic tool regardless of your age. Some people see a bunch of art supplies and they get overwhelmed or stressed out or something. Because of that, we do implement all kind of art. Visual art is our focus because I'm a visual artist myself, and that's how the organization started. But we do implement all kinds of art, and we let them express themselves in whichever form they find the most therapeutic for them. But one of the things
I didn't mean to cut you off, but again, that's what we do here. When you say all kinds of art, that's to me is kind of vague. I mean, like, what are different types of art that they can utilize there?
Sorry, music, okay. Dance, theater. Yeah. I always say there's no mistakes in art. So if any child, and I always say everyone is an artist, so I would challenge you on that, Sharifa, that everyone is an artist and art is subjective. Art looks different to everyone and everything is perfect. You don't need to even finish in what we do. You don't need to finish the project. It's all about the process of the therapy that happens while you're producing the work of art. And yeah, I believe that everyone is an artist. Everyone can express themselves in whichever way. Sometimes the children will sit there and write a poem and then, you know, maybe use colors around the poem, maybe not. But yeah, I think expression is the number one way to grow anything. It, you know, we're talking about entrepreneurship and business, but you still have to imagine what you want. I can't remember who was, I think it was Rory that was talking about that. You have to see what you want. And if for whatever reason you're not seeing it, then my opinion is that it's impossible to achieve it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, yes. Can I add something to what Jeannie said?
Absolutely.
Jeannie, I think you're an illustration of something that I really have come to believe, that those of us who have, I don't know if we've made it, but at least we not only are successful, I really think there's something to the saying that to those who much is given, much is required. And I believe that we have an obligation to do, Jeannie, much what you're doing, but to make sure, you know, there's no way that we can give everybody fire in their belly. There's no way we can give everybody, you know, the smarts to succeed in a certain area. We're all different human beings. But what we do have an obligation to do, I believe, is to make sure that everybody has an equal shot.
Yeah.
That there's nothing standing in the way, nothing standing in the way that's nonsense. Whether it is, you know, whether or not you're coming from a moneyed family, what your race might be, whatever. I think the whole goal of our contribution to society would be to make sure that everyone has a shot. We can't say the shot will hit the bullseye, but I believe that everybody should have an equal chance to take a shot at it.
I think that is so beautiful, and I would definitely agree. Jeannie, we have a question for you. Our new friend Joel would like to know, how can people help or contribute to your organization?
Thank you for that question. We are Draw Change on every social media platform, also drawchange.org. You can see what kind of opportunities are there for volunteering, for sponsoring children one-on-one, for volunteering within our programs around the world, and also financial contributions are also very welcome. We took a huge deficit this year due to COVID, and we're just trying to recoup all those funds lost, as well as we are looking to hire more art therapists to help with all the trauma that the compound trauma that the children that we were already working with are experiencing. So yeah, thank you for that question.
That's wonderful. Does someone have to be in a specific city to volunteer, or are there things they can do virtually?
Yes, especially now. I mean, unfortunately, now we're actually starting to go back to all of our programs around the world, but very, very slowly, methodically, and carefully. But yes, there is actually a lot of virtual work that can be done behind the scenes with writing. Carol, maybe you can help. No, I'm kidding. With writing, with...
Definitely going to support you. I think what you're doing is marvelous.
Just thank you so marvelous. Much. Thank you. You know, there is a lot of virtual behind the scenes work that can be done, grant writing, research, you know, honestly, business. I always say, you know, I'm on this podcast and feeling a little bit out of my element because I started the business. It was a year into starting the nonprofit organization that someone called me an entrepreneur. And I was like, whoa, no.
You know,
I went to art school. Yeah. And I'm here running this full-fledged business. You know, unfortunately for now, I spend most of my time behind a computer. I am on the ground running things, but not that much. Again, I'm talking about pre-COVID.
Yes.
But yeah, everything but I learned, I learned.
You are doing it. I love the fact that you are doing it. Do not ever, and I know you're not, but please do not ever sell yourself short because of degrees. People think I have degrees. Yeah. I don't have, I went to the School of Hard Knocks. I get through life because of my experience. I've been working since I was 11 years old. I can build computers. I can market. I can build a website. I could talk. I'm just multi-talented. So it doesn't mean just because you have a degree, you're going to be that much more successful. You will be it because you have studied and you have learned the information, but people get information a lot of different ways. So I don't want to downplay education, but some of the most talented, successful, wealthy people in the world have absolutely no degrees. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show, just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Carol.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. It's been a real honor and pleasure to be on this show, Sharifa. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Once again, what's the name of your book and where can people find it?
It's called A Discerning Eye. And I'm recommending you go to bookshop.org or your local bookstore. Thank you.
You are welcome. Absolutely. Jeannie, what do you have for us?
Well, I just mentioned our website if you'd like to learn more. So I won't mention that again. What I would say is get involved somehow in your local community. And I'm glad you asked that about volunteering virtually, because I guarantee you just about every nonprofit in the United States has virtual volunteering opportunities and they need you now more than ever during this pandemic. So get involved and learn about Draw Change or any other nonprofit organization in your neighborhood, please.
Yeah, so if you won't mention it, I will. Go to drawchange.org. Rory, what do you have for us?
Well, I would like to say to people, especially today, just keep in mind that people, they don't buy products nowadays, they buy you. So don't be afraid to show people who you are. And when value is made clearly, decisions are made easily. You guys can reach me at rorydouglas.net, rorydouglas.net. Also, you can go to aquafinancialcenter.com, aquafinancialcenter.com, to register for free financial literacy webinars during pandemic.
Yes, Joel says, nothing wrong with mentioning it again. And he added drawchange.org to the comments for anyone who is interested in either the volunteer opportunities or making a donation. Awesome. Wayne, what do you have for us?
Thanks, Sharifa. What I would say to the audience is, in addition to bless every one of you for being here, is don't be taken in by a lot of the media stories about, here's Johnny or Mary who wanted to be a nuclear physicist from the time they were two. It really doesn't happen like that. The main thing to remember is that I think just seize the day as things come to you. And furthermore, remember that today's disaster is tomorrow's great story.
I think that is such a wonderful way to end a show. Thank you. We'll see what happens and we'll make some more great stories. I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. We definitely appreciate your support, but please don't just watch the show, share it with your friends, with your network, help us get the word out about not only what we're doing, but all of our guests. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my 2-day New Year, New You teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow at the same time, 8 a.m. Pacific time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.